Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Well, we're going to hear from a guy who writes about such things right now, who says somebody else should be involved in this process. He's Dan Wilk, and he's from USA Today. And we're thrilled to have him with us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Dan, welcome to Baskin & Phelps. Good to have you back with us.
Hey, what's going on, Dan?
We're doing all right. And you've written a piece that I think is really interesting. And when I read the headline, I thought, yeah, you know what? Dan's right. And came out a couple of days ago, and it says, as college football plans are discussed, it's time for athletes to have a say. Nobody's bothered to ask them, Dan. And they're the guys right there in the heart of this whole thing. What are you proposing, and what do you think is going to happen there?
Well, look, I don't think that it's necessarily like over the next couple months we're suddenly going to get college athletes organized and ready to go on strike. But I do think we're at a moment where it's clear that college football players have immense power. They've never had more leverage over their own situations, because just look at how desperate these schools are to get college football up and running. I mean, look, they're doing some of these things, and you know, we can all kind of cheer the incremental positive developments of getting guys back on campus and whatnot, and you know, it looks like people are pressing forward with plans to try to start practice in July and play games first week of September. But to sit here and say that everyone's got their ducks in a row on all this, I think is foolish, because they're kind of flying blind, you know, and standards are all over the map, testing's all over the map. You know, whether or not they're really going to be able to contain any sort of outbreak or be able to keep these guys all from getting COVID, they don't know. Nobody knows, you know. So I look at this and say, if you're a college athlete, you know, I would want to have some control over my destiny here and control over my situation, and to say, if I'm taking on any sort of risk, that I want some reward. And that's what's happening in baseball. That's what's happening in the NBA. There's a players union who, you know, is able to negotiate all of these protocols, and there's a very clear risk-reward trade-off that people are going to have to make a decision about. But that's not the same with college. Basically, these schools saying, hey, show up, trust us, and these athletes are going to have to do it without really having a seat at the table.
Dan, how do they utilize, though, this? Like, everything you said is right, but how do you tell an 18-year-old who's super excited to go play for State U and is worried about going to prom suddenly need to realize, you know what, I belong to a union or I belong to some sort of association and I need to make sure that my voice is heard? How do you do that?
Well, there's been organization before in college sports. There's a group, the National Collegiate Players Association, that does a lot of advocacy, and you know, they've been able to organize some protests at various times. So there's some infrastructure in place. Obviously, with the Northwestern situation a few years ago,
right,
you know, it basically took a player kind of getting the ball rolling, and it went in front of the Federal National Labor Relations Board. It was a big deal. So,
sure.
You know, I think if you had a handful of, you know, elite players in college football around the country get together and basically say, we are not going to show up and we are not going to play until XYZ, then I think you'd have other players get on board very quickly, and I think schools would be so scared that they would have to get those guys to the table. I mean, look at what happened at Missouri a few years ago, where that team threatened to not play a game, and it got the whole administration there fired.
Dan, would this be, in your mind, if the players were to come up with some kind of an organization or some kind of a plan to present things, would it be specifically COVID-related with health issues here? Or do you think they would take a bigger picture and go things that have been talked about in college football and college athletics for a long time and try and get it all taken care of right now?
Well, I mean, look, in my perfect world, in my view, it starts with COVID, but it extends to all of these issues. The NCAA is in such a difficult place right now because they're dealing with this name, image, and likeness stuff. They get sued all the time every year by people who are alleging that their model is in violation of antitrust law, and the NCAA loses all the time. You know, and they have to make these concessions one after the other after the other. You know, that's how you end up with the cost of attendance stipend that we, you know, didn't used to have. It's how you end up now with the transfer thing. And, you know, all of these decisions end up being it's the adults making the rules and the players kind of have to go along. But there's because of what ends up happening, the NCAA to me would be better served to actually just negotiate all of this out. You know, what are the rules around transfers? You negotiate with the union. What are the rules around name, image, and likeness? You negotiate with the union. All of that stuff, if you have that settled and the two parties agree, well, then you're not getting dragged into court all the time. You know, you're not getting publicly pelted all the time. It would be so much easier for the NCAA to do their business that way. But, you know, they're just afraid that it would lead to having to pay kids. And, you know, maybe they're right, but if that's what, you know, I think the attitudes have changed so much that and the money's gotten so big, you know, it may be inevitable anyway.
Dan, let me throw this kind of idea at you. The Ohio High School Athletic Association earlier this week decided they were going to have more playoff teams to generate more revenue and to let more teams in. How far away is the NCAA? If they see they're losing money and they think they can play college football this year, you think they try to figure out a way to add more playoff teams to college football to make up for some of the lost revenue that they've had from other sports during the spring? Does that end up – because it seems like everything's on the table right now. Would that be a viable option, especially if you're looking at – like Ohio State said earlier this week that maybe 22,000 in the shoe for a game. Well, if you're only bringing 22,000 into a 102,000 seat stadium, you got to figure out how to make the revenue somewhere else. Is it possible that maybe they scrap some of the ideas or try to get out of some of the contracts they have and try to hurry up and make a little bit more money this year? Just your thoughts on that. I'm curious.
Well, look, I think it's something that could end up being a long-term consideration. I don't think that anyone's going to rush to do that this year. In fact, I know that's not going to be something that, you know, happens overnight.
Right.
But there's also another factor in that, which is, would it really make more money? Or how much more would it make? I mean, this is right now, in terms of the economic crisis that COVID has wrought upon our country, ESPN's not doing that great either. You know, and right. I'm not sure ESPN is going to be in a position to just say, oh, yeah, hey, here's another $1 billion for four more games, you know, or another $500 million for four more playoff games. Like, I don't think it's going to work that way. So there'd have to be not just a desire for the colleges to do it in a way to solve all the logistical issues that come from expanding the playoff, but you'd have to have a willing partner at ESPN who believes that they could make money off of it.
Dan Wilkin joining us, national columnist for USA Today, covers college sports. Dan, I need some insight onto this, and I'm wondering, I'm guessing they're doing it because they have to, but a lot of schools and a couple here in Northeast Ohio have dropped some programs already, and I've thought, did you have to do this already? Did you take such a hit with NCAA basketball and everything else and not having the tournament that financially you have to do this already? Or are schools doing things that maybe they've wanted to do for some time and this gives them a great excuse along with some need to do that?
I think everyone's situation is a little bit different. I think in some of these cases, you know, those programs were probably on the ropes anyway for a variety of reasons before the pandemic hit. I think certainly in other cases, the financial disaster is so profound that, you know, they kind of need the easiest and fastest way to balance budgets without hurting other sports. In some cases, you know, like you saw yesterday with East Carolina, they cut men's and women's tennis. And, you know, that's a sport that at all of these schools, for the most part, heavily populated by foreign kids. I think for East Carolina, I think 8 of their 10 women's players and 7 of their 8 men's players were not American. You know, so that just sort of makes it pretty easy to just, you know, chop off that finger, you know. And so there's a lot of different elements. I don't think there's a rhyme or reason to it. It's just very specific to the school. But, yeah, some of these athletic departments are just naturally going to get smaller. Cutting sports is the absolute last resort. Because they'll look to cut from, you know, recruiting budgets and coaching salaries and whatever they have to do to preserve those teams. I think it's all just institutionally based about what makes the most sense.
Dan, let me throw this at you, and I think there are some things to be learned. And I love the fact that you're bringing up the point about you know, player rights and players having a seat at the table, but. By the same token, we go back and look at, you know, what happened during the conference tournaments during NCAA basketball season. And I think in some ways, and we've talked to some folks, that it just screamed out that they need a czar for college basketball, someone who can, you know, the NCAA is the answer, but maybe the NCAA needs to figure out one guy that can be a single voice that can help conference commissioners in times like that where, you know, you're sitting there, you're watching the Big East, and who's going to play till halftime, and oh, boy, we're going to start checking temperatures. I mean, do you see the need for a czar in these sports to kind of emerge out of what we had happen during college basketball season this year and maybe football or other sports as well?
No, I don't think it that kind of thing is going to happen because just the way college sports is set up, you know, campuses like autonomy over what happens on their own campuses and conferences – like autonomy over what happens within their own ranks. And, you know, especially with something like this COVID situation, as you see, you know, schools try to navigate the path forward, it's hit different areas of the country different ways. It's a very, you know, we have a very big country, a very diverse country. And you know, also institutionally, what's important to Pac-12 schools is different than what's important to Big 12 schools, you know, by and large. Same thing with sure. SEC and Big 10. You know, so I think everyone likes to have the freedom and the autonomy to make decisions based on what's best for their small groups. Now, you know, I don't know where this is going to go or how bad this is going to get or what the ultimate ramifications are going to be if you know, some of these schools make or lose, you know, tens of millions of dollars and they have to completely change the way they do business. You know, maybe you see different groupings of schools or you see a breakaway in some way where schools with a more common budget and interest, you know, form some type of union where they can make decisions on their own. I don't know where it's going to go, but I really can't envision, just because of the way college sports is set up, all these conferences giving over the, you know, the leadership and the decision-making to one person. That's just not the way this works.
Dan, last thing, your extremely educated opinion. Is college football back in the fall, and does it mainly resemble what we're used to college football looking like?
Well, I think it'll be back. What it's going to look like, I don't think there's going to be full stadiums. I just don't see that, you know, unless there's some type of vaccine or major development with cures. I think people are going to be walking in you know, wearing masks. I think there's going to be different protocols. But I'm also fearful a little bit. I mean, look, I want there to be sports. I want there to be a football season. But I just – there's going to be so many inconsistencies in testing and the way schools are going about this. I mean, I'm afraid of what we don't know about COVID. You know, there's things that change all the time. I mean, just last week, you know, the CDC, well, it doesn't transmit easily from surfaces, whereas, you know, 2 months ago we thought it did. And, you know, now there's the thing that affects the inflammatory disease that affects kids when before it didn't look like it did affect kids. I mean, there's all these things we don't know about this disease because it's new. You know, and I'm just worried that schools are sort of rushing into something before they're ready. I'm afraid that there's going to be outbreaks on teams. I'm afraid that there's going to be a college football player die from COVID. And what does that do to this whole conversation? So, you know, I'm just more cautious about restarting some of this maybe than most, given that these are amateurs. These are not professionals. And I hope people know what they're doing.
Dan, thank you for your time today. We appreciate it very
much.
Thanks, Dan. And if you'd you'd like to get a lowdown on everything going on with college athletics, make sure you read Dan in USA Today, and you can follow him on Twitter at Dan Wolken. It's DanWolken. Dan, thank you.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.